Welcome to the latest edition of the Two Barrys Tennis Takeaway. Barry Cowan and Barry Milnes here with a look back at some of the things in the past week and certainly a look forward to what's coming up next week. I'm talking of Davis Cup over the past couple of days and Fed Cup from next week, particularly the tie that's going to be staged in Bath, the first time that Great Britain will be at home in the event for 26 years. But before we get into that, Bazza, let's look back at what's been the new version of the Davis Cup, these 12 qualifiers that we've had over the last couple of days, Friday and Saturday, indeed, that 12 nations managed to win through to join Croatia, France, Spain, USA, plus the two wildcard nations, Great Britain and Argentina, in the finals in November. For me, actually, I worked on the tie involving Austria against Chile. So for those of you wondering, well, what is the new format about? As we know, it is a shortened version. It's best of three set matches, five rubbers, yes, still the two singles on the first day, then a doubles followed by two reverse singles on the second day. And the tie that I covered from Salzburg was actually very competitive. It still has the home and away basis of it. So the visiting fans, the large number of home supporters, and the matches themselves were all highly competitive. In fact, on the second day, we had two three-set matches and one two-sets. But it was good, fair on offer, great atmosphere. To be honest, from a neutral point of view, I would say, well, that was okay, a shortened-down version, but it still had the basis of Davis Cup. What have you read about it? What have you made of what we've seen over the last couple of days?
It's been a busy week. It's no respite, is it, after Australia? I think if we go from where and when they made the changes, Barry, which was October, I mean, I like the tennis this weekend that we've just had because of the home and away. For me, that is Davis Cup. Nothing will persuade me that anything else is better than the home and away element. In terms of the rule changes, I actually like having the doubles third. In the Fed Cup, they've had the doubles fifth, haven't they? And sometimes it ends up as a non-event. They don't play the match. So I think it's nice that the doubles third. I think it's kind of quirky that some of the players, Shapovalov and Ogier Aliassime, to name but two, had to play their doubles and then come back out and play their singles, which is totally alien to them. But the Davis Cup always has been, and we talked a little earlier, didn't we, Barry? The Davis Cup is not always about the top guys. It's about giving a platform to potential stars. I commentated on a match in September, the semi-final, Tiafoe against Chorich. And it was the fifth rubber. It was to see who got through to the final. Chorich handled the occasion, had a brilliant end of the year and eventually won the Davis Cup. Tiafoe, I think, was definitely a work in progress. But a few months later, we saw what he did in Australia. So I think it's always an opportunity for younger players to handle the pressure. Some come out with it, a blaze of glory. Some sink. But ultimately, later on, it actually makes you stronger for it.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And aside from the two Canadians who ultimately got Canada through to the finals in November, point to a lad just 15 years of age, Jerome Kim, who played in the doubles for Switzerland and won in that doubles match as the Swiss were at home to Russia in Biel. Eventually, of course, the Russians did get through because, well, they had a strong team and Switzerland was certainly lacking their very best, the likes of Federer and Wawrinka not involved. But for Jerome Kim, what an opportunity for him and the fact that he was able to experience Davis Cup at such a young age and even come up with a win. So, yeah, you're right. It's not always about the very top guys. Of course, the ITF's been looking to have more involvement again from the very top guys. And it remains to be seen whether those very top guys will be involved come November.
Well, straight away, well, Federer's not going to be there, is
no,
he? Federer and Wawrinka aren't going to be there.
Serbia will be because yep. Filip Krajinovic won the fifth rubber. It went to the fifth in their tie against Uzbekistan. But, you know, whether Djokovic will play in that match, whether Troitsky, you know, Tipsarevic, those kind of guys will be involved, only time will tell us, I suppose. But certainly from those who were involved, it was very much, you know, Davis Cup still for them, representing their country, the home and away basis at this stage. But we won't really know how this all pans out until November's come and gone, will we? The finals in Madrid and how much the fans take to it, how many turn up to watch, and how it really goes down with those players just weeks before the new ATP Cup starts up in 2020.
Yeah, and the draw's out on the 14th of February, so not long to go before the draw, and we'll get a great idea, won't we? Six groups of three, isn't it? And the six group winners will go through to the quarterfinals, and then the two best second place teams will also join the six winners. That will be interesting, because you could have the scenario where it could all come down to games, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think we'll still need sort of calculators to work out some of the permutations, perhaps. But the fact that it is, there's this whole issue still, as we've had guests on the podcast talking about it. Philip Brook talking to us a few weeks ago about this whole sort of clash of on the tour right now of the different team events so close to one another. And the date for the Davis Cup at the end of the year does seem a tricky one. But we have to give it a year, I think, to really get a real feel for it and whether it can work in the way that obviously David Haggerty, head of the ITF, wants it to do. But there's still a lot of opposition. You only have to look at social media to see a lot of people perhaps not even taking an interest in it, or those who did feeling it just wasn't the same event over the past couple of days.
Mind you, I think my view, come Madrid, is probably going to be, what, three courts, I would say. The second and third courts the venue where they hold the Madrid Masters, how many fans will be watching? So if it is, let's say, Colombia playing Japan, how many spectators will be in? Because if there's 100 people or 200 people watching, that's not a great advert for the competition. But if you've got Spain playing at home against Italy, then it's for sure it's going to be 15,000 people. It's going to be a cracking atmosphere. And the players are going to buy into it if it's a great atmosphere.
In some ways, the nations I feel sorry for are the ones who have been the most successful, certainly in the last campaign, because they, apart from Spain, who got to the semi-finals, don't get to play at home this year at all. It's only in Madrid, and it could be for years to come. The likes of Croatia, France, USA, Great Britain, Argentina, all of those who are already lined up for the finals in Madrid. But it may be years yet before one of those nations gets a tie back at home.
Yeah, and the negatives for that, I mean, firstly, I think it affects your revenue. I mean, there will be some nations say actually hosting Davis Cup costs us money. But I think for the very top nations, they make money. But also, I go back, and we always mention it, don't we? Federer, he was a ball boy for Davis Cup. So the opportunities are not going to be there for your potential future stars, because nothing gives kids more inspiration than watching their heroes close up. And I think Davis Cup certainly was the huge benefit for that. The one person who certainly loved the buzz of Davis Cup, Colin Fleming. And a couple of days ago, I spoke to Colin about Davis Cup, about his new role as coach for Great Britain's Fed Cup team. They're in Bath next week. He was also head coach in Scotland. So he's done a lot, has Colin, since he retired from the tour 3 or 4 years ago. And I began by asking Colin how it's been linking up with the British team.
It's been great. All the players have been really sort of open to me joining the setup. Cuthvong's the captain, has been great, ever since she gave me the call to kind of come and join the team, which, to be honest, I wasn't expecting at all, and really sort of honoured to be able to join up and help however I can, support the players, I guess naturally try and help the doubles teams that we're putting out there. But look, when I was a player, I absolutely loved being part of the Davis Cup. They were highlights for me. So, I thrived on team environments and team setups, and like to think I bring a good sort of energy and positivity to that environment. So, it was a no-brainer for me to join up with the Fed Cup team and bring what I can to help them succeed.
Well, you often hear in football that the coach is the one who puts out the cones in the morning. So what does a Fed Cup coach do?
Well, I've been mucking in and doing whatever is required of me, really. I've been on court, spending a bit of time with the players off the court, and just familiarising myself with, I know Joe and Heather pretty well from my playing days. I don't know.
Did you play mixed with Heather?
I never got the pleasure, no, because Heather, obviously, Wimbledon champion and mixed and phenomenal mixed player. I didn't know. My old doubles partner, Ross Hutchins, got in there before me, I think, and got Heather out there. So, I never played mixed with any of them. But, Heather, you know, really successful there. But like I say, I know Heather and Joe pretty well. Don't know the two Katies, Swan and Bolter, so well, or Harriet. So it's been great to be here this week and spend a bit of time with them. Katie Bolter's coming in a little bit later. She's been in St. Petersburg competing. So be nice to spend a bit of time with her and get to know them. And as the relationships build, then hopefully I can have more and more of an impact, because that's the key thing. It's people and it's relationships and it's communication and it's working with them to do whatever I can. If it means picking up cones, Baz, I'm happy to do it. If it means going for a coffee just at the right time to see where they're at, or if it means getting out there and drilling for 4 or 5 hours a day, you know, I'm here for the team and to do what it takes.
It'd be interesting to hear your views. You were very successful in doubles in Davis Cup. You won 9, lost 2. If my maths are right,
I think you're right. I'm not great. I would have believed you whatever you said there. So I just got on with it. But yeah.
So what have you learned from your great experience in Davis Cup? Obviously, we were successful in winning the Davis Cup in 2015. You weren't part of that team, but very successful team environment. So what have you been able to learn from there to help you and Anne? Hopefully, with it being the first home tie for 26 years, I believe that we can get through to the playoffs.
First of all, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think first time in GB for 26 years, and I think you've got to give credit where it's due to the LTA for stepping up and hosting the event. You know, what an event it's going to be. It's sold out, you know, very quickly. Great interest in tennis in Britain, let's be honest, first and foremost. But in the, you know, in the Fed Cup team and the players we have now, there's a lot of excitement around the team. So that's going to be great. But, you know, my own Davis Cup experience, it kind of spanned 3 captains, actually. My first experience was 2006 as the fifth man, the kind of water boy as such. I came in, it was Greg was in the team. Andy, I think as an 18-year-old, was part of the team. And Arve Palmer and James Auckland was the 4. It was against Serbia, 2006, in Glasgow.
Some guy called Djokovic.
Yeah, and a handy number 2 called Tipsarevic as well. So they were pretty tasty. Djokovic has gone on, and we know what he's done since then. Andy, of course, as well. And Greg was a, you know, pretty top player in his own right at that time. So Jeremy Bates was the captain then. So I got an experience there, and then made my debut under John Lloyd. He brought me in to play Davis Cup, which forever be thankful to him. We're sitting here at the NTC, actually. I don't know if you remember, we had the playoffs for that first tie that I got.
Best of 5 sets, were you in that?
Best of 5 at the NTC. I lost to Josh Goodall on day 1. He cuffed me straight sets, I think, and then I played. We had a day off in between, Grand Slam conditions. I think I managed to scrape through against Dan Evans on the Wednesday, and I guess that plus sort of tournament performances was enough to get me the nod to be part of the 4 and play doubles with Ross Hutchins in that tie against Ukraine at Brayhead. That was my debut. We lost in 5, one of my 2 losses. But yeah, one you never forget, your debut. So that was under John, like I say. And then played under Leon right from the beginning of his reign, against Turkey down in Eastbourne, and through until 2014 was my last year. My last tie was the quarterfinal away to Italy in the World Group. So went on quite a journey, to be honest, and learned a lot from the different captains. I think obviously had the most ties under Leon, and I think what Leon did was really embrace the kind of everything extra that's part of the game now. I don't want to use the word kind of professionalized it, because obviously John and Jeremy were on it as well, but just the way the whole game's gone with sports science and the whole support team, and Leon's brought in experts in each area, you know, as a big support staff on the Davis Cup team. And, you know, I think that was wise from him. I think he accepts where his strengths were and where he needed a bit of support from an expert in their field, and he was open to bringing them in. So the whole thing became very, you know, very sort of high level.
Talking about Davis Cup, obviously much change in terms of the format, and someone who, hearing your passion, is a big advocate of home and away ties. A little shame that they've moved away from that?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a few home and away ties about to take place, but, you know, much...
In terms of the journey to the final?
Yeah, I think that's one of the special memories I'll have for the rest of my life, is the fact that we, you know, the low, the absolute, you know, rock bottom low of losing the tie in Lithuania, which was John Lloyd's last tie. You know, we flew home, and it was just, you know, no one really knew. I'll never forget going in the locker room, you know, when we lost, and kind of no one knew where to look, what to say. It was just so devastating. John obviously moved on, and you know, he gave me my debut, and I get on really well with John. Leon came in, we managed to get through that relegation playoff, which would have been a real disaster to lose. And then from there, it was such a special journey. So that's kind of that's going to be lost in a way, which I think is a real shame. I guess it's a positive thing that Britain got a wild card into the finals, but at the same time, it means they're not playing a tie now. So, you know, like we've got the Fed Cup team here about to play in GB for the first time in 26 years and showcase, you know, women's tennis in Britain, which is an amazing thing. There's not going to be those opportunities in the men's game, which it's a real shame, to be honest. And there's been a lot said about the Davis Cup, but, you know, hopefully in November it'll be a special event. And I'm sure, or in fact, I know that Leon and the team will prepare as well as you possibly can for a successful campaign there. But who knows what it's really going to look like.
A couple of weeks ago, Jamie Murray and Dan Evans were in the headlines. They sort of had a disagreement about Dan's views about doubles, and obviously Jamie also responded with his views about Dan. And where do you see the state of the doubles game at the moment and those comments from both Jamie and Dan?
In terms of the doubles game in Britain or in general?
No, in general.
I'm very good friends with Jamie, known him since I was, you know, as long as I can remember, really, for, you know, 6-7 years old. Get on great with Dan as well, and you know, being a part of the Davis Cup team and things with them. Jamie obviously put his kind of tweet out there, that I guess the sort of gist of it being Louis sort of done it again, Louis Caillé, in terms of another wave of doubles players have come through. I mean, I think when I was playing, there was sort of, I think we had 7 inside, if not close to top 50, with obviously Ross and myself and Johnny Murray have kind of stepped away, and then Luke Bambridge, Johnny O'Mara, Joe Salisbury have come in. You've got the Skupskis, Jamie Inglot, still doing what they're doing, and Jamie's obviously gone all the way to number one. So there's no doubt Louis's phenomenal at what he does.
What does he do? What is the secret?
Well, in doubles, he has a system. He's systematic about the way he coaches the game, and that's one of the things he's proud of, is that any of those British players could come together and play with each other and know what they're doing without having to have a sort of conversation about, oh, I do this slightly differently. There's probably idiosyncrasies that each have, but we have a British doubles system. And Louis's been so successful in coaching and implementing that. But I think often he gets pigeonholed as a doubles coach, and I see him as one of the best skills coaches I've certainly worked with. And, you know, I would rate him very, very highly in world terms, in terms of skill development. I know that he has had some input to some singles players' careers as well. Greg at a young age, Daniel Nestor, who's sort of, you know, 50, 60 in the world, he's had input to these players. So, you know, he's a phenomenal tennis coach, first and foremost, I think. And then I can see the point Jamie was making about him taking on a kind of leadership role with the LTA, because he is systematic and putting a system in place, something we've probably not had over the years, a way of sort of developing players. But look, it possibly is a little bit more difficult in singles, because everyone's so unique and there's so many different ways of playing. Doubles is, especially the British players, everyone playing pretty much the same way, serve and volley, and conforming to the same system. So I can see kind of both sides of the argument, if you like, in that Dan obviously has worked with some coaches that he rates very highly as well, and quite rightly. You know, I'm sure they've done great work with him, and he's gone on to you know, get into the top 50. Obviously, been away from the game for a while, and is on his way back there. It seems he's playing great tennis. Great to see him on the court playing so well against Federer. What a match that was! So, look, I can kind of see both sides of the argument. It's one of those unfortunate things. I'm sure Leon was probably looking at it as the Davis Cup captain, thinking, what's going on here? I don't need this. But look, I'm sure they'll be able to move on from it. It's just a slight disagreement, a snapshot in time, and they'll probably, next time they're together, just hopefully just sort of, you know, laugh it off with each other and move on.
Next time, maybe for the Davis Cup, addition to the team would be a judge.
Yeah, possibly. Or just, you know, Evans and Dan and Jamie together for doubles and just get on with it. You know, it's look, it's one of those things, unfortunate thing, you know, knowing them both. You know, you don't like to see them sort of having that sort of disagreement or argument, but it's just different opinions. You know, you and I would sit and talk tennis for an hour and we'd disagree on three or four things. Of course we would. It just happened to happen over social media and in the press, which is maybe not the best thing. And I don't know, I haven't spoken to either of them about it. Maybe they'd do it differently if they did it again. But it's one of those things. It's different opinions. And it's great that both guys are so passionate about tennis and about British tennis as well and are willing to sort of have their say. So, yeah, like I say, one of those things, but I'm sure they'll be able to move on from it.
Louis, you mentioned he's systematic, he's a formula. How do you think he would have, or how do you think he would potentially work with a doubles player that serves and stays back, like a Jack Sock, a Mark Lopez, Rafa Nadal?
Well, I think he'd work really well with them. You know, just his ability to understand the doubles game and to constantly evolve. I mean, when players started to stay back a lot more successfully, we spent a lot of time in figuring out how to be effective against them. The team he actually focused a lot on was Mark Lopez and Granollers. I think at the time they won at the O2. And it was just focusing in on how you could break their kind of games down as net players, if you like. And, you know, one of his golden rules, never more than one forehand, so never two forehands in a row, because that's what they can really hurt you with, even if a lot of players, their backhand can be more steady. They probably don't hurt as much with it, can't hit as much spin, as much power, as much variety, and then you look to be brave and angle off or knock off the more neutral volley and be proactive like that. If you find yourself just defending forehand after forehand, it's not long till you've got a hole through you, basically through your body. So, and we've done a lot of work in playing against servers that are staying back. So when you're rallying cross court, how to try and be effective there. Obviously, it's a test when you're playing.
So this will be your role, will it, next week for Fed Cup?
Yeah, I'll certainly be looking at trying to help the doubles teams that we're putting out there and be as effective as possible. It's I'm well aware that I'm coming in, you know, not long before the tie, so I'm not going to come in with sort of 25 things that we're going to be working on. You know, it's a sort of drip feed approach to try and just improve the areas I think I can have a biggest impact on, a quick impact, if you like, that can help us, because, you know, doubles can be so important. It's best of three matches, best of three rubbers in this Fed Cup group stage. So it's a bit of a shootout, really. And we could find ourselves pretty quickly at 1-1 in the deciding doubles on any given day. So we want to have players going on there that are confident. And we got five primarily singles players in the lineup, but we've got some good doubles options. I really believe that. And I managed to get them out playing some doubles this afternoon, and we had a bit of fun with that. And they're very open, very receptive to the little bits of advice I had. So hopefully we can continue that and become stronger at doubles as, you know, this week progresses, but also as the Fed Cup team goes on a journey, like I say.
Well, Colin, thanks very much for talking to us. Finally, what can we expect next week, the Fed Cup?
I think you can expect a phenomenal atmosphere. I think you can expect a British team that is going to be, you know, so passionate and so fired up to do well and inspire, you know, a nation of you know, female tennis players that will be there and inspire a nation of tennis players. And I think it's just going to be a really, really exciting event of top tennis, and I can't wait to be a part of it.
Well, a great sense of Colin's energy, his passion for tennis and indeed for the Fed Cup, and his involvement next week going to be something that we'll obviously keep a close eyes on, Bazza. It's going to be the Europe-Africa Zone Group 1 Event B that's going to be staged at the University of Bath, the indoor hard courts, from the 6th to the 9th of February. Eight countries are going to be involved, two pools of four nations. The eight are Great Britain, Serbia, Croatia, Hungary, Turkey, Greece, Georgia and Slovenia. And the winners of each pool, well, they then play off to get into the World Group 2 playoffs in April. It's such a hard road, isn't it?
It is a hard road, but it's something that Britain know how to negotiate their way through it. In their group, they have Hungary, Greece and Slovenia. I certainly like their chances of getting through that group into the final next week in Bath, where more than likely they'll play Croatia. And they can be a difficult opposition. They have Krunic and a couple of other very good players. So that would be, I think, the hurdle, the potential stumbling block. But when you possess Konta, who is, of course, the genuine world-class player at Bath in both groups. I think Britain have got a great chance, but it only needs one match to go the other way. And then, of course, you come down to the doubles. And as Colin mentioned, that they are, none of the five girls are doubles specialists. So it's very much singles first. And then, of course, doubles on top of that. But it'd be interesting. You know, Heather might not play singles. It might be Konta and Katie Bolter. So therefore, you would expect Heather to certainly step into that. And we know that she's got great experience, having done very well at the mixed doubles at Wimbledon before.
But obviously, from a Great Britain point of view and the team itself, they've been envious, haven't they, for some time now of the guys having these home ties. I can think back to ties I went to in the 1990s. I think of the USA playing against Great Britain at Birmingham, and the great sense of occasion. It was really promoted very well, that one. And we had this kind of more modern approach, the noise, the drama, the excitement that was generated by the crowd. It really was people, fans, genuine fans, getting the chance to see their heroes in action, and some great competition. You know, Jim Courier playing against the likes of Tim Henman and Greg Ruzedski back then, and it's moved on. And of course, all the great ties up in Scotland over recent times with the Murray brothers and the rest of the team doing what they've done. And the way Colin talked in the interview to you about the journey that they went on, the fact of how, you know, Leon sort of set out a plan and took them through year after year. And I only have to look at what I was watching over the last couple of days, that tie in Salzburg. Nicolas Massu, who, great player that he was, Olympic singles and doubles champion back in 2004, and he was a world top 10 player. But he's been their captain for the last five seasons, and he started with a group of teenagers way down in the lower reaches of the competition. So to have got them now into the finals in Madrid, well, you only had to see how much it meant to him, not just point by point, because he was playing every one from the side of the court and almost joining in. But at the very end of it, he sprinted across the court to hug Christian Garin when he finally clinched the tie. So it means a whole lot to a whole lot of people involved.
Well, in individual sport, it's so nice to be involved in a team sport. And I often find, you read it and hear it, the athletes involved in team sports like the individual basis. So you want what you haven't got. And I think that is the magic of team competition. And I certainly expect real energy from Britain next week. And it would be fantastic for them to get through Bath and then get a home tie in the playoffs and to then get into World Group 2, which is something that has been lacking for years.
OK, after what we saw, as well as heard at the start of the week from Andy Murray, his picture from his hospital bed and that picture of his hip operation, is there the possibility that he could play again for Great Britain? I mean, is he going to have a career beyond this injury, this surgery, do you think?
Yes, I do, Barry. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I think we're going to see Murray back. You're going to push me and say when. I don't think we will see him, personally for me, I don't think we'll see him at Wimbledon on the singles court. We potentially might see him, if it all goes well, playing doubles. But this is why I think he's had the operation. And I thought he gave the clues in that interview he did with Mark Petchy straight after he lost to Bautista Agut, before they ran, unfortunately, for the Australian Open, before they ran the package about his retirement with all the players praising, you know, Murray and his wonderful career. That he said, well, you know, I might be back. The operation. And I think for now, for Murray, he'll hope that it's gone well. There is previous with it, something that Bob Bryan had, and he was able to get back very quickly. What was it, 4 or 5 months? However, that's a doubles player. This is, you know, Murray trying to get back on the singles court. But interesting that, as you know, Barry, I had a knee operation before Christmas, and I went to see my physio last week, and I asked him about the operation, and he said that in terms of being able to play, he doesn't think it's going to be that much of a hindrance. He said the biggest problem will be it's consecutive days, and Andy doesn't know, does he? You know, he doesn't know until he's put into that uncomfortable situation physically, where he has to push himself in practice to start with, but also in a match, you know, Grand Slam, best of five sets. I mean, heavens forbid how he was after that match against Bautista Agut in Melbourne.
Well, it was some match-up, and it would be amazing to think we might see him perform like that again somewhere down the road, wherever and whenever that might be. But of the past week, aside from that story, a couple of other things you wanted to pick out.
Yeah, nice to read and see that Dan Evans has continued his good run of form. Unfortunately, he just came up a little bit short, but a final at a challenger in France, that's a really good effort. And amazing, Kvitova. She lost in the final of the Australian Open, and she was back playing this week in St. Petersburg. And probably no surprise, Barry, that she lost early. And really unfortunate for the Czechs that Petra was forced to pull out next week in their match against Romania. So that now is what in the balance, isn't it? Because you've got Pliskova as the leading Czech player and Simona Halep playing for the Romanians.
Yeah, well, the Czechs have an incredible record in the event in the last few years. I think they're 10-time champions, and I think they've won 6 times in about the last 8 seasons. It is a remarkable run, but maybe Romania will be the ones to halt them this time. We'll find out, of course, over the next few days. The main World Group and World Group 2 ties take place on the 9th and 10th. And, of course, we'll be keeping a close eye on events at the University of Bath from the 6th to the 9th with Great Britain hosting that Europe-Africa Zone Group 1 Event B. We'll be talking about that and other things, no doubt, in our next podcast in a week's time.